Welcome to Gima's Tales for Children. Each week, we visit a different part of the world to hear stories, legends, and myths. Some of these stories are so old that the origin has been lost in time. Some are new, and some are timeless. Join us this week as we travel to Greece. It's appropriate to tell stories from Greece at this time of year. While we're all watching the Olympic Games in South Korea, it's good to remember that Greece is the country where these games started. Greece is located in Southeast Europe, close to both Africa and Asia. It isn't just a country on the mainland of Europe. There are literally thousands of little islands that are part of this nation as well. Ancient Greece is said to have laid the foundation for Western civilization, having a large influence on the Roman Empire and European culture. It is the birthplace of democracy, although it is interesting to note that only Greek landowners were allowed to vote. For information on the internet about Greece for children, I suggest www.sciencekids.co/NZ. Of all the Greek stories that are told, none are more famous than Aesop's fables. He wrote hundreds of them. I put together a little collection to share today, each with a moral of its own. The first is called The Cock and the Pearl. A cock was once strutting up and down the farmyard among the hens when suddenly he espied something shining amid the straw. "Ho, ho," quoth he, "that's for me," and soon rooted it out from beneath the straw. What did it turn out to be but a pearl that by some chance had been lost in the yard? "You may be a treasure," quoth Master Cock, "to men that prize you, but for me, I would rather have a single barleycorn than a peck of pearls." The moral? Precious things are for those that can prize them. The Lion in Love. A lion once fell in love with a beautiful maiden and proposed marriage to her parents. The old people did not know what to say. They did not like to give their daughter to the lion, yet they did not wish to enrage the king of beasts. At last the father said, "We feel highly honored by your majesty's proposal, but you see, our daughter is tender and a young thing, and we fear that in the vehemence of your affection, you might possibly do her some injury. Might I venture to suggest that your majesty should have your claws removed and your teeth extracted? Then we would gladly consider your proposal again." The lion was so much in love that he had his claws trimmed and his big teeth taken out. But when he came again to the parents of the young girl, they simply laughed in his face and bade him to do his worst. The moral? Love can tame the wildest. The Birdcatcher, the Partridge, and the Rooster. A birdcatcher received an unexpected visit from a friend just as he was about to dine on a simple meal of herbs and parsley. Since he hadn't actually caught anything lately, the birdcage was empty. So the man decided to slaughter a speckled partridge that he had tamed to use as a decoy. The partridge begged the birdcatcher not to kill him. "My dear man, how will you hunt with your net in the future? Who will assemble that flock of gregarious, keen-eyed birds on your behalf? And who will serenade you with singing as you drift off to sleep?" The birdcatcher let go of the partridge and decided to kill the bearded rooster that lived next door instead. The rooster, however, let out a squawk from his perch and said, "If you kill me, how will you know how much longer it is until dawn, since I am the one who tells you the time? How will you know that Orion with his golden bow is on watch during the night? Who will remind you of the morning's work, announcing the dew on the bird's outstretched wings?" The man said, "It is useful indeed to know what time it is, but all the same, my friend has to have something to eat." The Miser and His Gold. Once upon a time, there was a miser who used to hide his gold at the foot of a tree in his garden. But every week he used to go and dig it up and gloat over his gains. A robber who had noticed this went and dug up the gold and decamped with it. When the miser next came to gloat over his treasures, he found nothing but the empty hole. He tore his hair and raised such an outcry that all the neighbors came around him, and he told them how he had used to come and visit his gold. "Did you ever take any of it out?" asked one of them. Nay, said he, I only came to look at it. Then come again and look at the hole, said a neighbor. It will do you just as much good. The moral, wealth unused might as well not exist. The man, the boy, and the donkey. A man and his son were once going with their donkey to market. As they were walking along by its side, a countryman passed them and said, You fools, what is a donkey for but to ride upon? So the man put the boy on the donkey, and they went on their way. But soon they passed a group of men, one of whom said, See that lazy youngster? He lets his father walk while he rides. So the man ordered his boy to get off and got on himself. But they hadn't gone far when they passed two women, one of whom said to the other, Shame on that lazy lout to let his poor little son trudge along. Well, the man didn't know what to do, but at last he took his boy up before him on the donkey. By this time they had come to the town, and the passers-by began to jeer and point at them. The man stopped and asked what they were scoffing at. The men said, Aren't you ashamed of yourself for overloading that poor donkey with you and your hulking son? The man and boy got off and tried to think what to do. They thought and they thought, till at last they cut down a pole, tied the donkey's feet to it, and raised the pole and the donkey to their shoulders. They went along amid the laughter of all who met them, till they came to Market Bridge, when the donkey, getting one of his feet loose, kicked out and caused the boy to drop his end of the pole. In the struggle, the donkey fell over the bridge, with his forefeet being tied together. He was drowned. That will teach you, said an old man who had followed them. Please all, and you will please none. The Town Mouse and the Country Mouse. Now you must know that a town mouse once upon a time went on a visit to his cousin in the country. He was rough and ready, this cousin, but he loved his town friend and made him heartily welcome. Beans and bacon, cheese and bread were all he had to offer, but he offered them freely. The town mouse rather turned up his long nose at this country fare and said, I cannot understand, cousin, how you can put up with such poor food as this, but of course you cannot expect anything better in the country. Come you with me and I will show you how to live. When you have been in town a week, you will wonder how you could have ever stood a country life. No sooner said than done. The two mice set off for the town and arrived at the town mouse's residence late at night. You will want some refreshment after our long journey, said the polite town mouse, and took his friend into the grand dining room. There they found the remains of a fine feast, and soon the two mice were eating up jellies and cakes and all that was nice. Suddenly they heard growling and barking. What is that? Said the country mouse. It is only the dogs at the house, answered the other. Only, said the country mouse, I do not like that music at my dinner. Just at that moment, the door flew open. In came two huge mastiffs, and the two mice had to scamper down and run off. Goodbye, cousin, said the country mouse. What, going so soon? Said the other. Yes, he replied. Better beans and bacon in peace than cakes and ale in fear. The next story is actually a fairy tale. It is the only one I have ever found that is from Greece. Here is A Fairy Wedding. It is said that one May day long ago, the hills of Eurostena smiled with rare and remarkable beauty. The pines of Mase and the fir trees of Tricola bloomed. The wild thistles grew soft and lovely. Ferns wore a yellow crown. The perfumes of wild flowers were heavy on the air, and all the land was filled with joy. Although many years have passed, the day is not forgotten, and from generation to generation the story of this day, as first related by Vassos of Tricola, is throughout the countryside remembered and told again and again. It was the wedding day of Nereidos, a fairy youth, and Nereida, a fairy maid. Vassos of Tricola, after searching for 33 years, had at last found a magic fairy spring, which, when one drank from it, allowed one to see the fairies and communicate with them. On this day, the 3rd of May, just at noon, Vassos was seen on that hill of Tricola, called the Pine Hill, running or rather gliding above the earth with the swiftness of a bird. Those who saw him had time only to be amazed when he was lost to sight. On the third day following, when he appeared in the village of Tricola, the villagers thronged about him to hear what had happened. "It was a fairy wedding," he said. "All the fairy world knew about it. The hills of Tricola and the mountains of Eurostena knew it. I was invited. Fairies came for me while I was drinking at the fairy spring. I heard, as though far off, their drums and violins and the music of strange instruments. Then the clouds became like chariots, sinking lower and lower to come near me, while the music swelled and echoed around me and seemed to draw me on and up until the clouds were all about me. They were filled with beautiful maidens who took me away and away across the Corinthian Gulf and other seas, across green fields and blue waters." Vasos did not know the spot where the cloud chariots descended to earth, though he thought it might be Mount Pendos in Thessaly. On the top of the mountain where no human foot had ever stepped, arose the fairy palace, gleaming gold in the sunshine, with silver towers and spires fading into the clouds. Within, the rooms of varied colors and the long, flower-festooned halls were crowded with innumerable guests. Vasos was unable to describe the beauty of these fairy people, for their faces, though like those of human beings, could not be clearly distinguished, and their clothes, like milky foam, transcended all description. Colored lights played through the palace, at one point tinging all things with gold, the next with rose, then violet, crimson, green, and lavender. The music of harps and violins and the steps of the dance changed with the shifting colors, but laughter and joy went on ceaselessly. In each room, 1,000 candles burned in candlesticks of crystal and burnished gold, while the bright silver walls like mirrors reflected their brilliance. The smoke of incense rose on all sides, and the air was laden with its piquant odor. In one of the great halls, a table of crystal set in silver held fairy food heaped on chased silver platters. It was impossible to tell of what the food was made. Vasos knew only that it was white and soft and so light that it seemed to melt away as soon as he tasted it, leaving the memory of a rich yet delicate flavor that he could never forget. For 3 days the wedding continued, and all the while there was music, feasting, and dancing. Nereida and Nereidos had a beauty surpassing all mortal beauty. On their heads were crowns of gold. Their clothes were distinguished from those of the other fairies by the silver lace and jewels of all kinds that sparkled whenever they moved. The bride and groom were always on horseback. Food was handed up to them on golden trays. Fairies sang continually, dancing, scattering blossoms, and twining ribbons around them. Ceaselessly one heard, rising and falling with wave-like rhythm, the gentle tinkling of glasses as they were clinked together. The guests drank cherry red nectar from crystal glasses etched with flowers and fairy faces. On the third day, after all had drunk for the last time to the health of the bride and groom, the glasses were broken, and with a crash of crystal, the festivities came to an end. "I do not remember how it happened," finished Vasos, "but at noon I found myself back on the pine hill of Tricola, proud to have been the only mortal guest at the fairy wedding." One of the very first stories about Cinderella is from Greece. This one has the evil stepmother out of the picture at the beginning, but there are still the two evil stepsisters, and of course, a handsome prince and a shoe. Here is Little Saddle Girl. There were once three sisters spinning flax. The two eldest were cruel and mean-spirited, but the youngest was kind and gentle. The two older sisters had no use for their mother, who was no longer able to spin. And after all, it was their spinning which provided them with garments to sell and money to buy food. One day, the eldest, watching her mother slowly pick up her spindle yet again from the floor, said, "Whosoever spindle falls, let us kill her." The mother's spindle fell, and they left her alone. Again they sat down to spin, and again the mother's spindle fell, and again, and yet again. "Ah, well," said both older sisters, "let us kill her now." No, said the youngest, do not kill her. Kill me instead, for I cannot wish that anyone die at our hands. But they would not, and the two of them killed their mother. When they got ready to bury her, they invited the youngest to join them. Come and throw her body underground with us. But she refused and sat down on a saddle and wept and upbraided them. Many a time they said to her, come and bury her, but she would not, and when they had done burying their poor old mother, they went away. Then the youngest, whom they called Little Saddle Girl, gathered all the bones together and buried them underneath the grate and smoked them every day with incense for 40 days, and after the 40 days were out, she went to take them away and put them in another place. And when she lifted up the stone, she was astonished at the rays of light which it sent forth, and raiment was found there, like unto the heaven and the stars, the spring with its flowers, the sea with its waves, and many coins of every kind, and she left them where she found them. Afterwards her sisters came and found her sitting on the saddle and jeered at her. On Friday her sisters went to temple. Then she too arose. She washed and attired herself, putting on the garment that was as the heavens with the stars, and went to temple, taking with her a few gold pieces in her purse. When she went into the temple, all the people were amazed and could not gaze upon her by reason of the brightness of her garments. When she left the temple, the people followed her to see whither she went. Then she filled her hand with money from her bag and cast it in the way, and so she kept throwing it down all the way she went, so that they might not get near her. Then the crowd scrambled for the coins and left her alone, and straightway she went into her house and changed her clothes and put on her old things and sat down upon the saddle. Her sisters came home from temple and said to her, where are you, wretch? Come and let us tell you how there came into the temple a maiden more glorious than the sun, who had such garments on as you would only look on, so brightly did they gleam and shine, and she strewed some money on the way. Look, see what a lot we have picked up. Why did you not come too? Worse luck to you.
You are welcome to what you picked up. I don't want it, said she.
Next Friday they went to temple again, and she did the same. Then they went another Friday, and just as she was flinging the money, she lost her shoe among the crowd and left it behind her. Now the king's son was following her, but could not catch her, and only found her shoe. Then he said to himself, whosoever foot this shoe exactly fits, without being either too large or too small, I will take her for my wife. And he went to all the women he knew and tried it on, but could not manage to fit it. Then her sisters came to her and spoke as follows, you go and try. Perhaps it will fit you.
Get away with you, said she. Do you think he will put the shoe on me and get it covered with filth? Do not make fun of me.
The prince had taken all the houses in turn, and so he came at length to the house of Little Saddle Girl, and his servants told her to come and try on the shoe.
Do not make fun of me, she said.
However, she went down, and when the prince saw her, he knew the shoe was hers and said to her, do you try on the shoe? And with the greatest ease she put it on, and it fitted her. Then said the prince to her, I will take you to wife.
Do not make fun of me, she answered.
Nay, but I will marry you, said he, and he took her and made her his wife. Then she put on her fairest robes. When a little child was born to her, the sisters came to see it, and when she was helpless and alone, they took her and put her into a chest and carried her off and threw her into a river, and the river cast her forth upon a desert. There was a half-witted old woman there, and when she saw the chest, she thought to cut it up for firewood and took it away for that purpose. And when she had broken it open and saw someone alive in it, she got up and made off. So the princess was left alone and heard the wolves howling and the swine and the lions, and she sat and prayed to the gods. Give me a little hole in the ground that I may hide my head in it and not hear the wild beasts. And they gave her one. Again she said, give me one a little larger that I may get up to my waist. And the gods gave her one. And she besought them again a third time. And they gave her a cabin with all that she wanted in it. And there she dwelt. And whatever she said, her bidding was done forthwith.
For instance, when she wanted to eat, she could say, "Come, table, with all that is wanted, come food, come spoons and forks, and all things needful." And straightway they all got ready. One day, the prince came into the wilderness to hunt, and seeing the cabin, he went to find out who was inside, and when he got there, he knocked at the door. And she saw him and knew him from afar, and said, "Who is knocking at the door?" "It is I, let me in," said he. "Open doors," said she, and in a twinkling the doors opened, and he entered. He went upstairs and found her seated on a chair. "Good day to you," said he. "Welcome," said she, and straightway all that was in the room cried out, "Welcome!" "Come, chair," she cried, and one came at once. "Sit down," she said to him, and down he sat. And when she had asked him the reason of his coming, she bade him stay and dine, and afterwards depart. He agreed, and straightway she gave her orders. "Come, table, with all the covers," and forthwith they presented themselves, and he was sore amazed. "Come, basin," she cried. "Come, jug, pour water for us to wash. Come, food in 10 courses. And immediately all that she ordered made its appearance. Afterwards, when the meal was ended, the prince tried to hide a spoon and put it into his shoe. And when they rose from table, she said, "Table, have you all your covers?"
"Yes, I have."
"Spoons, are you all there?"
"All," they said, except one which said, "I am in the prince's shoe."
Then she cried again as though she had not heard, "Are you all there, spoons and forks?" And as soon as the prince heard her, he got rid of it on the sly and blushed. And she said to him, "Why did you blush? Don't be afraid. I am your wife." Then she told him how she got there and how she fared, and they hugged and kissed each other, and she ordered the house to move, and it did move. And when they came near the town, all the world came out to see them. Then the prince gave orders for his wife's sisters to be brought before him, and they brought them, and they were banished forever from the land. And so henceforward they lived happily, and may be still living happily for all I know. We cannot leave Greece without telling a myth. Greek myths are famous throughout the world. They are some of the original stories which have been told and retold for thousands of years, all about gods and goddesses, superheroes. Hercules is a hero from a Greek myth. Beautiful maidens like Pandora, who is in this story, and strange and magical creatures. Greek myths make for wonderful reading. I have chosen one that I like. Here is How Troubles Came Into the World. A very long time ago, in the Golden Age, everyone was good and happy. It was always spring. The earth was covered with flowers, and only gentle winds blew to set the flowers dancing. No one had any work to do. People lived on mountain strawberries, which were always to be had for the gathering, and on wild grapes, blackberries, and sweet acorns, which grew plentifully in the oak forests. Rivers flowed with milk and nectar. Even the bees did not need to lay up honey, for it fell in tiny drops from the trees. There was abundance everywhere. In all the whole world, there was not a sword, nor any weapon by means of which men might fight with one another. No one had ever heard of any such thing. All the iron and the gold were buried deep underground. People were never ill. They had no troubles of any kind and never grew old. The two brothers, Prometheus and Epimetheus, lived in those wonderful days. After stealing the fire from man, Prometheus, knowing that Zeus would be angry, decided to go away for a time on a distant journey. But before he went, he warned Epimetheus not to receive any gifts from the gods. One day, after Prometheus had been gone for some time, Artemis came to the cottage of Epimetheus, leading by the hand a beautiful young woman whose name was Pandora. She had a wreath of partly opened rosebuds on her head, a number of delicate gold chains twisted lightly around her neck, and wore a filmy veil which fell nearly to the hem of her tunic. Artemis presented her to Epimetheus, saying the gods had sent this gift that he might not be lonesome. Pandora had such a lovely face that Epimetheus could not help believing that the gods had sent her to him in good faith, so he paid no heed to the warnings of Prometheus, his brother, but took Pandora into his cottage and found that the days passed much more quickly and pleasantly
when she was with him. Soon, the gods sent Epimetheus another gift. This was a heavy box, which the satyrs, creatures who were half man and half goat, brought to the cottage with directions that it was not to be opened. Epimetheus let it stand in a corner of his cottage, for by this time he had begun to think that the caution of Prometheus about receiving gifts from the gods was altogether unnecessary. Often, Epimetheus was away all day, hunting or fishing or gathering grapes from the wild vines that grew along the riverbanks. On such days, Pandora had nothing to do but to wonder what was in that mysterious box. One day, her curiosity was so great that she lifted the lid a very little way and peeped in. The result was similar to what would have happened had she lifted the cover of a beehive. Out rushed a swarm of little winged creatures, and before Pandora knew what had happened, she was stung. She dropped the lid and ran out of the cottage screaming. Epimetheus, who was just coming in at the door, was well stung too. The little winged creatures that Pandora had let out of the box were troubles, the first that had ever been seen in the world. They soon flew about and spread themselves everywhere, pinching and stinging whenever they got the chance. After this, people began to have headaches, rheumatism, and other illnesses, and instead of always being kind and pleasant to one another, as they had been before the troubles were let out of the box, they became unfriendly and quarrelsome. They began to grow old, too, nor was it always spring any longer. The fresh young grasses that had clothed all the hillsides and the gay-colored flowers that had given Epimetheus and Pandora so much pleasure were scorched by hot summer suns and bitten by the frosts of autumn. Oh, it was a sad thing for the world when all those wicked little troubles were let loose. All the troubles escaped from the box. But when Pandora let the lid fall so hastily, she shut in one little winged creature, a kind of good fairy, whose name was Hope. This little Hope persuaded Pandora to let her out. As soon as she was free, she flew about in the world, undoing all the evil that the troubles had done. That is, as fast as one good fairy could undo the evil work of such a swarm. No matter what evil thing had happened to poor mortals, she always found some way to comfort them. She fanned aching heads with her gossamer wings. She brought back the color to pale cheeks. And best of all, she whispered to those who were growing old that they should one day be young again. So this is the way that troubles came into the world. But we must not forget that hope came with them. So we've come to the end of our time together today. If you have a story you'd like to hear, please feel free to write me with your request. If you've written a children's story and would like to share it, let me know as well. I welcome your feedback. You can email me at guima@kciw.org. That's guima@kciw.org. See you next week. Same time, same place, but very different stories. We'll travel to the Bahamas to hear wonderful tales of fish and magic and sunken civilizations. This is Guima saying goodbye and happy reading.